Hello and welcome to season two of the Howarth Timber and Building Supplies 1840 podcast. Now, I never thought I'd be uttering those words about welcome back to season two. I thought we'd just kind of peter out midway through season one. So well done to us. Anyway, welcome to season two of the podcast. We started season one by interviewing Nick Howarth, our MD, and talking about the history of Howarth Timber and getting his thoughts on his recollections of how he joined the business and also on his plans for the future. So we thought, as we start season two, the perfect way to do that would be to do a similar episode, but this time with the next generation of the Howarth family. So I'm delighted to be joined by Imogen Howarth Law, Alistair Howarth, and Louis Howarth.
Pleasure to be here.
Welcome. Thank you very much. You can say hello.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, that's terrifying. Yeah. So let's start at the obvious place and get you to introduce yourselves.
So I'm Imogen. I'm the group head of HR. I've been with the business since 2011.
Fantastic.
I'm Alistair. I'm the London Broccoli branch manager. I've been with the company since 2018.
Okay, good. And I'm Louis. I'm managing director of the Verdon Timber Group and also the divisional director of the Buildpack division within Howarth Timber and Building Supplies.
Fantastic. So good. So welcome aboard. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Don't all look so nervous. We are all friends and we're just going to bite. Before we continue, there is one sibling in the family that isn't part of the business, and that's your sister, Alistair, isn't it?
Yes, my sister Francesca. She lives down in London also and has a sort of a successful career outside the business doing marketing for L'Oreal. She's sort of a brand manager in L'Oreal and got her own career out of the company at the moment.
Excellent. Why did she decide not to join the family?
I think two reasons. Probably she wanted to move down to London and there wasn't really a job that sort of suited her. And also I think she did some work experience when she was sort of about 16, 17 years old on the trade counter at the Leeds branch. And I think that...
that was enough to put her off.
I think that put her off a little bit.
I think that would put anybody off. Right, good. So today we're going to talk about the history of the business. We're going to ask you to talk about how you see the tradition, what's gone before, and how you see the future, because I am kind of making the assumption and crossing the fingers that you guys are coming through and at some point in the future you'll be taking over the business. So it'd be good to get your thoughts on the past and how we move into the future. I'm also interested in understanding a bit about your stories of the business, about what your first recollections are and, you know, how you've moved from being kids to, you know, to where you are today. But before I pass it on and we start that, I thought what we'd do is just touch very, very briefly on the history of the business. So that's as a reminder to people who might have heard the episode with Nick, or for any viewers or listeners who do nothing, know nothing about us, it'd be a good way for them to understand what we're talking about. So I'm going to whistle stop through 185 years of history in about 90 seconds. So 1840 was the start of the business, hence why the podcast is called the 1840 Podcast. It was started by William Hudson in Leeds, and he set up a business called William Hudson & Co. The first Howarth into the business was in 1865, and that was John Henry Howarth, who was William's nephew. Lots went on over the next 100 years. There were wars, two world wars, there were strikes, there was the Industrial Revolution, masses went on. But 1959, your grandfather, Peter Howarth, took control of the business. And that's really the beginning of the modern era of the Howarth Timber Group. He moved the business on massively over the years until 1988, when unfortunately he passed away and the business passed over to your fathers, Nick and Andrew. And from that point, Nick and Andrew really expanded and diversified the business. So as we sit here now with four parts of the business, we've got Howarth Timber Building Supplies, we've got Howarth Timber Engineering, we've got Arbor Forest Products, and we've got Verdon Timber. So the business has gone from a small business in Leeds to a big independent business that we have now. Other key moments, 1990, you were born.
I was.
1991, you were born.
Indeed.
Have we said your brother and sister?
Don't think so.
No, we haven't.
Right.
No.
So, you are both brother and sister, 1990, 1991, but born on exactly the same day, a year apart. August 16th.
Yeah. August the 16th.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great first birthday.
But welcoming you roughly.
We had some pretty good parties over the years.
Yeah, we had some good parties, yeah.
Did that ever cause any problems having...
Not really.
It worked well
because we always had like double the amount of people at Pines when we were growing up. And it was good. I have fond memories of it. So
nice. That's good. Yeah. And in 1997, you came into the world.
Yeah.
So you're the youngster of the trio.
I am, yeah. Six or 7 year age gap.
And then that takes us really up to today, 2025. We're 185 years old. That really is some history, isn't it?
For
a business. Okay, so that sets the scene. So first question to the three of you is, what are your first memories of the business? So you're looking at me very intently. Shall we start with you?
We can do. I'd say it's a mixture. So I don't have, there isn't one specific memory that sticks out to me. But what I do remember is kind of snippets of different places. So I remember going to one of the branches. It might have been the old site at Leeds or Grimsby with my dad. So it must have been a Saturday morning getting something for, I don't know, possibly DIY. And then I've also got a very vague memory of Arbourforest as well. And again, going into the offices, don't know why, but I was there. And I think it's a mixture, just like a mixture of memories that go into one. Strangely remember the old Tower Timber style plastic bags around the house as well. So I say not. There's not one specific, it's more just a mixture of a few.
When did you start working in the business?
That's a very good question. Like work experience.
Yeah, kind of just...
Oh, gosh. 13, maybe say early teens. Yeah, many of summers out on the yard at Arbourforest stacking timber.
Is that what they got you doing straight away?
Pretty much,
so even though you're a woman, it would still get out in the yard?
I was out in the yard, yeah.
Good for you. Alistair?
Similar. I mean, I've got a vague memory of when I was a very little child going into the Leeds branch with my mum to go meet my dad to go for lunch. I think that was at the Leeds site, the original Leeds site, which shut in the early 2000s. So I think I must have only been maybe 5 or 6. And then again, similarly to Imogen, I started working in the Leeds branch when I was about 15. School summer holidays just in the yard, a little bit behind the counter. I was sort of buddied up with a guy called Andy Phelan, who's still here, at the Leeds branch. So he was sort of like my first buddy to be partnered up with. Yeah, I'd say that those are my two first memories.
Cool. Where are we?
My first memory is probably going to Arbourforest, actually, rather than any of the Howe of Timber branches. I remember I used to go and walk around the old mill. With my dad, and I used to remember walking around all the machineries and seeing all the timber on machines and all the sawdust and like kind of the smell of the wood dust. And that's what I remember. I mean, back in those days as well, we're talking like late 90s probably that I was doing that. And as you can imagine, you know, loads of men at that time, you know, working in a mill. There's some pretty funky calendars on the machinery and the walls. And then my dad just walking padly, don't look at that.
Memories of that. And then I must have gone to the branches when I was younger, but I don't really remember being in the branches when I was really young. But then I started at Arbourforest stacking wood and sweeping the yard and stuff when I was 13 on the school holidays, and then moved on to working in Thorn and various branches when I could drive in.
It's interesting you mentioning the calenders, because whenever we've done like branch episodes and had people who've been around for a long time, conversation always comes back to calendars. I've never heard them called funky calendars.
Before. I didn't know how else to describe them. And as head of HR, what do you think about funky calendars?
I mean, I'm going to go with no comment.
How did you all get in those early days when you were like teenagers just started? How did you get treated by people?
I've always found everyone to be incredibly welcoming. I think people recognise it's a family business. I've never felt anything but kind of welcome and supported in anywhere that I've been.
Very welcomed. I mean, when I first started, sort of 15, you are almost like a teenager still, so you get sort of trapped like a teenager to a degree. But again, I really, really enjoyed my first years with the company and those summer jobs. So, positive. Yeah.
Yeah, I had a great time. A great time working at Arbor Forest and at the branches. Quite a lot of the people that I worked with when I was 13, 14 are still there now, and still go and speak to them now, and got some really funny memories. And yeah, everyone was very welcoming to me, and yeah, always had a good laugh with everybody. So
in terms of kind of career development and moving through the business, what benefit did it give you starting like you did just in the summers and school holidays?
It gives you a very rounded view. I think you get to see a lot of different roles in different companies throughout the group, which is really beneficial. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great thing to do. It'd be, you know, if we could start all starters off doing a bit in every single role, I think it'd be the best way forward. But no, it just gives you a really rounded view, I think, and at least a light touch of understanding what each department and each function does.
Yeah,
similar. Good. You get sort of good experience and you understand different jobs. So now sort of running a branch, I've sort of done the different levels, like behind the counter, sort of worked internal sales, I've done bits in the yard. So you can kind of understand more how it works, which is useful when trying to run the branch as well.
Yeah, I think I'd echo everything Imogen and Alistair have said. And I think, and also from a point of view of coming up through the business, it's important that people have seen that, you know, we have been involved in the business since a young age, especially when we're in senior roles now, you know, worked our way up through the business, which you've seen the last 7 or 8 years,
yeah.
That you've seen us all progressing the business, and there's loads of people in the business that saw all the years before that. So I think that's only a positive thing.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I'm not trying to embarrass you, you know, with this, but as a colleague and a kind of employee of the business, it's great to have seen that you've all worked really hard to get to where you've been. You've not just been parachuted in into like management jobs.
Yeah.
You literally have started stacking timber in a yard and sweeping yards and avoiding funky
challenges. It's funny how the world's changed.
Yeah.
Were you always going to end up working in the business?
Let's come to you first.
To be honest, I'd say yes. I've always had like a real interest in it from like a young age. I love sort of speaking to my dad when he got home after work about things and just sort of getting an insight. And yeah, I'd say yes, that has always been what I wanted to do.
Yeah, I think from a young age, I was really interested in the business, and probably from when I was like, became 12, 13, I think I knew that it was what I wanted to do. Although, you know, my dad always said to me, there's absolutely no pressure to go into the business. You can do whatever you want. I was really, really interested in it and very, very passionate about it. And I still am. And it's something I very much enjoy doing. And if a day comes that I don't enjoy doing it, then I probably won't.
I would say probably similar to Louis. So I think there was definitely never any pressure. I always knew it was an option. Did I always know I'd come in? Not so sure. I think I question how much I was clear on what I wanted to do when I was younger. But what I would say is, reflecting on all the choices that I made growing up, they probably always aligned to come into the business. I'd say it was always an option for me that I was aware of.
Wait, so in those younger years when you were like not wobbling, but you were considering other things, what other things were on the table?
Good question. I quite like kind of health and wellness, quite like animals. So probably something kind of a health and wellness or an animal atmosphere.
What, like a vet?
I don't think I could deal with that. I couldn't deal with the kind of emotional side. Yeah. I'd maybe go into like nutrition and have a little farm on the side.
Oh, nice.
That might keep me.
That's quite a move from HR. HR help? Is that as close as you get in an HR help and wellbeing?
I think so. Potentially, because it is, you know, I enjoy trying to make the company like a better place to work. And I think, you know, the effects of that hopefully is aligned to people's wellbeing. So I guess there's a loose connection.
That's good. I really couldn't see you as a vet.
Yeah, no.
If you hadn't joined the business, what might you have been?
I'm not 100% sure. I mean, my biggest interest, I'd say, is in cars. So I've maybe tried to get a career doing something to do with that.
What, driving or?
Not necessarily driving, just involvement with some form of things to do with cars. That is what I'd guess to do. Or One of my friends, he's got a family business that's a jeweller's, and he's always off around the world selling watches and stuff. I've always thought that's an extremely interesting job.
And you're stuck in London selling lumps of wood and bags of cement.
But I'm over something like that.
You missed a trick there. I think I'd probably be doing some kind of property development, do a bit of that on the side when I can, when time allows. And something I really enjoy doing and quite passionate about, hobby, but also a pretty good side hustle. So I think I'd probably run into some kind of development business, something like that potentially.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Okay. Right. So let's probe a little bit deeper then on working in a family business. We'll start with you, Alistair. What do you think are the pros and cons of working with your family?
I think first one that comes to mind is everyone's sort of very much aligned on wanting the business to succeed, because it's all part of our sort of legacy, but also our future. So you get some really sort of committed, motivated people working in the business. And then also as well, I've found it useful being able to have discussions with my dad about work, because obviously he's my dad first. When some things that might be difficult to talk about in a work sense with colleagues, having been able to have that conversation with your dad, especially when it's about like a problem or something, that can be very good to sort of get the support from that. I've really found that useful.
Has that ever caused you a problem? Because you, as a branch manager, you report into a regional manager and ultimately into your dad.
Yeah.
Has that ever caused you a clash of...
Not really, because as you said, there's a layer of management between me and my dad, and I got on very well with my manager. So no, it hasn't, to be honest, no, not really.
And any cons to working with family?
I'd say the only sort of con, the downside is when it goes wrong and the sort of problem, your branch underperforms or something goes wrong, you do feel very sort of emotionally attached to that. Like, you don't want to be letting your dad down, you don't want to be letting sort of your other siblings down and that are in the company. Like, you do have that emotional connection, whereas perhaps some people might look at their job, if it doesn't go well, it's not as much of an issue.
Yeah, it's good. So how do you handle that? So you, obviously you'll get the inside track as a branch manager.
Yeah.
And you'll see things that Aaron, your regional manager, can't see because he's not close enough to it, and definitely that Nick can't see.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel when you see things going wrong that do impact the business?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously unpleasant. It's it isn't nice, but you can have, like I said, I've got good people around me that I can have the discussion with and really try and set things going in the right direction. And as I said, you've got the plus side that you can have those conversations with your dad and really get some good advice and guidance and support.
Have you ever had any issues with the other managers in your region because you're a Haworth, or don't they see you as a Haworth when you're Miss Alistair, the branch manager?
No, I've always got on well with the other managers in the company, and especially in my region. I wouldn't say it's been a problem.
Yeah, okay, that's good. So, Imogen, how did the three of you go about finding your space and niche in the business? So as you start moving in at whatever age you were, kind of the sky's the limit. How did you decide I'm doing this and you're doing that?
I think it probably follows on from the conversation that we were having earlier. I think because we did have that exposure to the business when we were younger, I suppose it gave us the opportunity to experience working in different areas. And I think when you're fortunate to have that opportunity at a young age, you start to build an understanding of, my skill set lies here or my skill set lies there. And I think when you get that opportunity coupled with the experience of being at work, I think naturally you start to kind of fit, I guess, into a place, or at least build up an idea of what area of the business you like to work in. It's almost a bit of a perfect storm, because I wouldn't say there's been no role creation. So it isn't like, Imogen wants to be a marketing director, let's have a marketing director. It's definitely been a case of what aligns with our skill sets. What roles are they that are coming up that are available? Would we be a good fit for that role? And I think it is, it's just that perfect storm. So sometimes it is a case of waiting. And I think once you're in that role and you find somewhere that you are happy with, it's a case of taking that role forward, and doing what you can within that role.
How did you two find your niche?
As in that, I sort of started just work my way up from within the branch, and I've always, the bit that I particularly like doing in the branch is sort of the sales aspects of the job, and that's something I really try and spend a lot of time doing, and I got that from sort of having those early jobs in the branches and finding what you really really like and work and what you're good at.
I mean, I started off full time in Arbor Forest Products after university. I was in internal sales and then did that for only about 10 months, I think. And then I was, ended up moving to Northampton and became an external sales representative. I did that for a couple of years and really enjoyed that. And then I took some time out and ended up going traveling for a year, which was a brilliant experience. And then when I came back, I decided that I wanted to go into the merchant group. And I think that was a good choice. I've enjoyed my time in the merchant group. I think I was led rather than by any strategic thinking long term. I think I was more led by my heart, to be honest. Yeah. And just the feeling of what I wanted to do. I ran quite a few branches, you know, and that is something I've really enjoyed. Genuinely, thoroughly, thoroughly. It's been stressful at times, but running the different branches that I've run and, you know, getting the team on side and then, you know, hopefully leading them to success has been, it's been a privilege, really. I've really enjoyed it.
It's a bit of a strange question to ask, really, because I know it's a question that people think and are interested in knowing. But actually, you take the Howard name away, you're no different to any of us. And if I look at my career, I stumbled into builders merchanting and I've just... You said you kind of find the bit that you like and you work on it, polish it, and then you've got to wait for a gap and it's got to come up, and then you've just got to take chances. Did you all go to uni?
Yes.
Yeah.
What did we do?
Business management.
Business management. Destiny in the stars.
That's why we've not gone into veterinary and yoga, and you've not gone into jewellery and... Yeah.
You're not an estate agent. It was the only thing I wasn't very good at school. That wasn't my preferred thing. But I was only really ever interested in business at school, and that was how, I guess, why I ended up doing business.
But I guess the thing is with business, it's such a wide subject, isn't it? Unless you are 100% sure at 18 and definitely want to do this, it leaves doors open to you to go whichever way you want. Do you feel any pressure around the legacy of the family name?
Personally, you mean to lead the business?
Yeah. So as you're moving through, do you feel the weight of everybody looking at you, thinking, well, there's Nick and Andrew now. At some point, they'll finish.
Yeah.
And everybody be looking at you, going, right, here we are. Here's the next.
Me personally, I don't. I think, as you said at the start, the group's quite diverse now.
Yeah.
I think it'd be tough that a family member, one of us each, to lead each of the businesses. I don't envisage that. Yeah, that may happen, who knows, but I don't envisage that's what will happen. We'll have external leadership in some of the businesses like we do now with engineering. I'd certainly like to be a leader of the business in the years to come, and I don't think I really do feel the pressure of it. Maybe I did when I was younger, but I think I've got used to it now. I genuinely love my job. I love what I do, so no, I don't think I do. What about you all?
I certainly really, really want the company to succeed, as sort of my dad and Uncle Andrew sort of do come to sort of wind up and go into retirement. I really want them to be sort of content in their retirement, knowing that the business is going in good hands, which I'm confident it will do.
I wouldn't say necessarily pressure. I think there's definitely a sense of responsibility and accountability that you feel, but I wouldn't say pressure is the right word, but you definitely feel responsible for something. But in a way, I think because it isn't just a job for us, that's, I guess, what keeps you so motivated and what, you know, drives you to want to do well and succeed.
I know this is a bizarre question, or do you kind of forget you're a Howarth when you're working?
I don't think it makes a difference to my day-to-day role.
In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. Like I said, I always do feel that responsibility to really want to sort of do drive the branch. And I don't want to, when things have gone wrong in the past, as I said, it is, I do, as in feel that sort of pressure.
Yeah, but is that because you're a Howarth, or that's because it's Alistair and Alistair wants to succeed?
Probably a combination of both, to be honest.
Yeah. I do agree with that. I think specifically when things go wrong, maybe, and something we're responsible for, I think actually probably with the Howarth name, you feel a bit more pressure. You think, should this be happening? But of course, it doesn't matter who you are. Things go wrong and...
Yeah.
Do you ever talk about succession as a family?
We never used to, but it was more over the previous years, haven't we?
Things. Well, obviously, you can't fight time, can you? And Andrew and Nick are getting older, and everybody stops at some point.
I think it's a challenge. Sometimes it's a challenging thing to talk about in terms of our future positions within the business, because I can only speak for myself and Imogen, to be fair. I'm not sure about Alistair's, because he was on a different age to us and not spent as much time with Alistair. But I've applied for the roles that I've had within the business, and I've applied for roles in the past and been knocked back, applied to be the manager of the Harrogate branch,
right.
And got knocked back from that and didn't get that. Somebody else got that. And so I've had to apply for roles. I think Imogen had to apply for your group head of HR role, Ultimately, I think it's the best person gets the role. So in terms of succession, in terms of your company ownership, of course, that's a given. But in terms of roles within the business, that's you go as far as you push yourself, I guess.
But without poking into private, conversations around the family and allowing for the fact that the world can change at any moment. There must be some conversations about what happens next, because you, Andrew and Nick are really experienced, leaders. Plus, it's their own business.
Yeah,
and you would always be looking for succession plans in any of the positions in the business. Are you starting to talk about where next?
Yeah, so Andrew and Nick, I'd say, have been. I think when we were younger, it isn't something that we really spoke about, and I think they're definitely. I would say, I'd try not to speak on their behalf, but I would say they've waited until they felt that we've all got a good understanding of the business and are mature enough to deal with and have those conversations. And I would say it's probably been the past 5 years where we do make sure that these topics are discussed, and we certainly have a much more clearer understanding of succession and what that might look like. And I also think over recent years, Andrew and Nick, recognizing that they are getting a bit older, they've also built, I'd say, their kind of external support structure with where they are as well, that they probably once didn't have.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you're all getting older as well, aren't you? So even in the time I've been here, you've all gone from being 20 somethings to 30 somethings, and that kind of 30 to 40 is when you start naturally becoming the professional people that you are. You're still in your...
I'm 28. 20, yeah, I'm still in my 20s.
Oh, you've got years to wait then before life gets gets serious. So just playing a little bit of a game just to get your thoughts. There's a question for each of you about if you took the business over tomorrow. And for the purpose of this, I'm just saying the Howarth group. I appreciate there's different parts to it. So to Louis first, how do you think you'd navigate the differences between styles and directions of leadership if you took over
from the previous generation?
Good question. I think, first of all, you have to recognise the significant value that's come before us. Seventh generation family business, the business is where it is today because of smart thinking, good long-term decisions and a strong culture.
Yep.
And I think they're things that we'd never want to lose, obviously. But I think every time a new generation comes into the business, they come with a new diverse range of perspectives. And so I think you've got to have we've got to maintain the things that have made us successful over the years from the previous generations. But then also, I think, be brave enough to make changes where we think improvements can be made and drive the business forward, whether that's investing in technology, people, growing market share. So I think you've got to obviously show massive respect to the previous generations where we are today. That's the reason we're in the fortunate position we're in. But also
be brave and, you know, say, look, I think we should do something differently, which, you know, we've been in a few meetings, Paul. You've probably seen a little bit. You've seen a little bit of that from me. You probably will have. So, yeah, I think sometimes you've got to do that. And as you know, I'm
just on that.
Yeah.
As an employee, yeah, sat in those meetings, it is interesting seeing you all growing up,
dying,
going from,
yeah,
from kind of just going with the flow to getting to that age where you've got your own opinions and want to put them forward. And yes, yeah, they're certainly getting interested.
Yes, yeah. So, but it's all passion. Yeah. Know, it's all positive, isn't it? It's all passion, and people have different ideas. And yes, I think, yeah, to conclude, yeah, show respect to the previous generation. Continue to do what was successful, but then where we can identify things where we think we can do things better, adapt and change things, then where we can identify those, we should do that.
Right, now he's just legged me over by asking the question that I was going to ask you, so thank you for putting me under pressure in the moment.
All right.
So I'm now going to put you under pressure with an impromptu question.
Okay, what is it?
So so the question to you was going to be, how would you handle the tradition and innovation? So how do you take the best of what's gone and add to it?
Yeah.
What we need to, which he answered, thank you. So my question to you would be,
yeah,
if you took over building supplies tomorrow, and Nick's view has always been we go right,
yeah,
but you strongly believe no, we're going left, how would you make that work in the early days?
Well, I mean,
whilst he stepped aside hypothetically,
yeah,
it would never be a clear I'm gone. He would always be there.
I think, a huge part of a huge reason why the company's been successful is because of the people that have worked in the company. Obviously, we've got some sort of industry leading people in the business. I think if I had to take it over right now, I'd try and get as much advice and support and influence from them. I'd really sort of try and take that on board whilst I was in my very early years of my management career. If I imagine I had to do it tomorrow, I think I'd lean on that a lot, and then really try and focus on what we know works well. But then as also, yeah, try and use my own mind, get good advice on what else we could do to work, and just put maybe not jump in with 2 feet, maybe sort of do 1 foot first and then the flips again.
Half a kick.
A bit slow. But yeah, I think that if I had to, thinking off the top of my head, that's probably what I'd do.
So broadening that question to you two now as well. How would you push your dad away to give you the space to become you from day one?
I think it's about...
I'm doing this with a smile on my face, Andrew, by the way.
I think it's just about, you know, as kind of Louis said, like recognising where the business is and how far we've come, and kind of respecting that past and history. But I think there's a lot to be said for being honest and open, and I just having those, I guess, being brave and just having those transparent conversation and making sure that the communication is both ways. There's not a lot of things that an honest conversation can't solve.
Even with your dad? Any dad? I don't mean your dad.
Yeah.
I mean any dad.
I think so.
Yeah.
You're just nodding.
Yeah, I think I don't think I would want to, you know, push my dad away. I think obviously my dad, certainly for me and Imogen, has been a massive part of who we've become. You know, he's you know, with what he's done with Arbor Forest over the years, he's certainly a big idol for me. I think he is for Imogen as well. It's incredible what he's achieved with that business. Yeah. And yeah, I don't think I would want to push him. I think, yeah, I probably share a lot of characteristics with my dad, but I've also definitely unique as well, I'd say.
Oh yes.
definitely unique.
Agree with you.
Just picking up on that though, that is keep that thought in mind as you're going to a good place. But that uniqueness is interesting looking from outside, because you are all very different.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a different bend. It would be a bit worrying if all three of you were the same.
I think there's massive strength in that diversity between us. We are all pretty totally different characters, really, when people get to know us. And I think there's, you know, going in as the seventh generation of the business as potential leaders, I think that bodes well for us, that strength.
Mm.
Do you think, same question, and I'll tell you why I'm labouring it. I've got a friend who's a farmer, and he's just or a year or two ago, he took over the farm from his dad. It was his, yeah, it's been his family farm. And he'd kind of got to a similar kind of, we're probably a little bit older than you, but yeah, his dad was in his 70s, you know, getting old to be a farmer. So he eventually said, right, you take it on to his like result. But now his dad won't leave him alone. Well, I won't do that.
Yeah.
Oh, I won't use that piece of equipment. Yeah. Well, that's natural, isn't
it? Yeah. Push him off the combine arms. Yeah.
I think he's tried that, but the old
push
bugger,
him with a slurry fit.
The old bugger, yeah.
He's a farmer. He's indestructible.
But I think it's just human nature that, like, Nick and Andrew cannot step away from the business and then just go,
yeah,
it's yours. Because they put heart, soul, blood. Yeah. When you hear some of the stories,
yeah,
it is an amazing story.
Yeah.
Do you think you could navigate that?
I think so, yeah, because I think I'd want to get lots of that advice. And when you've been around doing the job for so long, you'll have seen so many scenarios repeat itself that you can know how to face challenges.
Imogen, how do you think our colleagues and customers would see that change of generation? So it's Nick and Andrew have been a bedrock for everybody for a
long time. I'll
say ever, for a very, very long time. How do you think colleagues and customers would see it?
Again, I think it's going to come back to kind of what I said before. I really think it's about communication, and being transparent and recognize, people recognize that we're a family business. So I think understandably people will assume that the family are going to still remain in the business. I think it's almost giving people the opportunity as well to get people on board early, kind of listen to people's views, when that transition does happen one day, celebrating the small wins, and making sure, I guess, that people understand what's happening and why. I think as long as, again, coming back down to that communication piece, I think things are communicated clearly and people have the opportunity to feed back on that and understand why we're doing something, I don't think you can go too far wrong.
Yeah. Have you two got views?
Similar to Imogen, I think, I think hopefully people will have faith in us as the next generation when the time comes. I mean, I think we've all sort of proved ourselves by, as I said, working from a very young age. You guys have both had very successful areas in your career. Like, I'm very proud of the direction the branch is going in now. So I think people probably will obviously know it's a family business, and I'd like to think they would have faith in us guys, knowing what all three of us are like.
Yeah. I agree with everything they've said. Not much to add to that, I don't think, Paul. So
we've nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
We're safe. Right, moving on to the future then, because that's the next part of this. A kind of industry question for you.
Okay.
What do you think, what's the biggest challenges for the building and timber industry over the next 5 to 10 years?
The biggest challenges?
Yeah.
I think the biggest challenges will come in the form of potentially, the challenges for us and our business will come in the form of technology and how technology rapidly continues to change the sector. Like, obviously, digital platforms, decade ago were just becoming a thing. Now they're huge. Will major players like Amazon, for example, try and enter the market? How will AI change? Obviously, AI and technology will help us massively, but I think also it presents a challenge, because we have to adapt our business to the changing demands of the consumer continuously. And I think potentially over the next decade, that's going to happen at maybe the rapidest pace we've ever seen with technology.
Yeah.
And I think people as well, getting young people into our sector is proving to be a hugely, hugely challenging thing. So it's, how do we continue to attract, good people?
Have you any thoughts on that?
I think it's time. I'll just say I'll pass to my sister, because she looks after HR.
That's a question for HR.
I think it's tough, isn't it? I think there's industry bodies, like BMF do a lot of good things like that. They put social events on, all that kind of stuff. I think that's great. That kind of, people come to the sector and think it's not all, just working the builders' merchants every day. We get to go and do this and do that. I think it's how do you make the industry sexy, isn't it?
I've
asked that question a lot.
Yeah.
In the first season to different people, and it's everybody really struggles with it. But the fact of the matter is, if you can get people in at some point, there's a good chance you'll stay. You'll either go straight away because you really don't like it, or you'll stay forever. So that's my story.
Yeah.
That's your three story, and everybody else who I've asked have done exactly the same. We stumbled into it, but we loved all the people and cut and thrust.
I don't think anybody grows up, do they? Like going to college or university, thinking, I'm going to work in a builder's merchant. So I mean, it's a great career. I've had an absolutely fantastic career working in builder's merchant. I would actually recommend it to anybody that, you know, you've got to be pretty thick-skinned there, to work behind a builder's merchant counter. But I'd recommend it to anyone. I've had an absolutely excellent time doing it. I think if people could kind of, see the time that I've had over the years, I think more people would come into it. It really can be a very, very fun, fulfilling and rewarding job, and you make relationships for life. I'm still friends of all the teams at all the branches around, speak to them personally, and it's a shame that it's difficult to get the message across.
Have you got any other thoughts on
I'd say that it is such the people industry, that the people part of it is what makes it a fun job, when you build the relationships, work well, but also it's having the best people that makes this a successful business, and attracting and retaining those top quality people. And I think that's something that we'll always have to make sure that we do, because that ultimately is what creates the success of the company.
Just echoing, I think, what Louis and Alistair have said, it really is a people industry. It's great industry. It's good fun. And I think, there's a lot of career options in the industry that people don't realise, HR, for example, or, marketing, IT. It isn't always just necessarily kind of behind the counter or out on the yard. So I think sometimes it's getting that message across. But I think Louis hit the nail on the head. It's kind of, how do we make the industry sexy? Because it isn't seen as a sexy industry to go into, which is a shame, because it is a really great industry.
Well, Alistair, what would success look like in the next 5 to 10 years for the business?
So I probably think, first and foremost, that the business is in a good place, sort of in the good financially healthy place, and performing well. I'd also really like to sort of see my dad and uncle being in their retirement and being sort of content with the way that the business.
So you're kicking your dad and uncle out of the business in the next month.
No, that's not.
It's on camera. Careful what you say.
It's like being able to be in their late 70s and not feeling that they've got to jump in and put things right, and they're happy. And then also, I'd say that a lot of the sort of colleagues that have been with the company a long time and have been in my dad and uncle's generation sort of view the company as going in the right direction and are still happy with the business. And then I'd also sort of say another thing, a view of success would be that us guys have all transitioned into the roles that we're doing, and we're all sort of happy in those roles and performing well and working together.
Nice, that's good. And how would you like to leave your mark on the business?
Oh, good question. I would like to continue. I mean, obviously we've made quite a few changes in the merchants recently, specifically, well, the whole group really, on the people side. I'd like to continue making positive changes where I can, and just developing in my own career really. We'll see.
And where would you like your career to be?
I'm not sure. I'm quite open-minded, to be seen.
Oh, does that mean you've got a plan you just don't want to share?
No, I'm not. I'm quite open-minded with things.
You're only with us three in that camp. Alistair?
What in terms of where?
Yeah, how would you like to leave a mark on the business as you go through the rest of your career?
Definitely, I've been a good asset to the company, I don't have like a set career goal in mind, like a job I view. I mean, my biggest thing that it would be for the company to be in a good way and performing well. That's what I really want to care about, and it remains a great company to work for.
Yeah, Louis?
I think I'd like to kind of continue trying to, grow the businesses, grow sales revenue, grow profitability, but also mentor the people, be a mentor to the people that I do it with. I really, really enjoy leading the teams. And kind of, if I
work out how to do something and work out how to try performing somewhere. I really enjoyed bringing the rest of the team along with me. That's how I'd like to leave my mark. I'd like to think people would think Louis helped people, you know, helped people, yeah, brought us all on and drove us towards a common goal, which is, I guess, long-term business success.
Do you feel any pressure to follow in the footsteps of your fathers? Because they've been they've been amazing, haven't they? When I read our company history book and you see some of the ups and downs that they've had to, you know, navigate, the fact that they took over the business when your grandfather died, and they were they're in their late 20s, I think. They're probably younger than you were, and they brought all that change. Do you feel any pressure to follow them?
So, certainly, I think there's the pressure there to make sure the business continues to succeed. But whether that's us personally running the various companies or, as Louis mentioned earlier, whether it's professional managing directors running the companies, I mean, my biggest fears, as I said, is that the company's in a good place and doing well. And if that means one of us guys running it, or whether it's professional people, that ultimately is my biggest. Yeah. So in a way, yes, a bit of pressure that it succeeds. Yeah.
Yeah, I think just echoing what Louis and Alice have said, really, it's, you know, hopefully achieving, I guess, sustainable growth with an engaged workforce so that everyone's, you know, pleased to be part of that journey on. You know, hopefully 200 years, not too far away, we'll be celebrating that with Andrew and Nick.
Yeah,
that'd be quite special. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, 15 years. That'd be a nice. Good success to find.
How old would it be then?
Oh, gosh, you're testing us now, Paul.
Mid-80s, I think.
Mid-80s.
Yeah.
That's nothing nowadays,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be cool, that, wouldn't it? 200
years.
Yeah,
it'd be amazing. Yeah.
You can get them on the podcast.
Yeah, then.
Yeah. We ought to try to do that.
Do you think your dad would come on the podcast?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we really need to, he's kind of the last piece of the circle, isn't it? We've done Nick, the new guard.
Yeah.
And then your dad in.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, Andrew. Your children are offering you up to us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel any pressure then to follow in the footsteps?
I don't feel any pressure to following the footsteps. I can, you know, I could do anything else I wanted, but, and I wouldn't feel bad about that whatsoever. So I don't feel any pressure to follow in the footsteps, but like what Alistair said, do I feel pressure for it to be successful if I'm involved? Of course I do. You know, if you're leading the business and you're however, then it needs to continue at the same level of success or surpass what it's previously had, I feel. So,
well, I know you all from outside, and I know you're all winners. I know you're all passionate and you want to win. So whether you're Howarth or not Howarth, I would assume you would be the same people, you know, without the name and want to win.
Yeah,
that's good. Well, that's a good way to wrap things up, I think, though. We've gone from the past and into the present and the future, but we can't finish off just dead.
Yeah.
So I've got two questions to finish you off with. The first one is one that we ask all of our guests, and we've actually gone on to publish some of these, and that's to ask you to share the best piece of advice you've been given. And we've released them just recently in like 3 mini booklets, so I can't believe Howarth Timber are releasing words of wisdom. But here we are. So we might as well have some more. We might as well keep going with it. So the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
I knew you were going to ask me this question. Now, I think there's a lot of advice that's given, and picking the hardest one is the best. My husband told me to say never eat yellow snow.
Yeah.
So not going with that one. I think more of a better one to go for is probably never assume. Never assumes a quite a powerful one that can be applied in a lot of different circumstances.
Nice. That's very pertinent to me, just starting coaching training. So I like that. That's good. Alistair?
It's one that my dad says every day's a school day.
Oh, you can't have that.
He tells us that all the time.
Does, come on.
I mean, that's one that's been told to me. I think that's definitely one. But another one that I've heard before is always, and sort of whether it's predominantly in business, but I suppose also in your personal life, sort of trying to surround yourself with the best people, and so that develops you, and certainly in the business sense, it really, when you've got a real strong team around you, that's what's going to create the success.
Do you know what, the amount of people I hear when you ask about advice, they use that one that Nick
gives about yeah. every day's a school day.
I've had it since I've been born. So I'll try and implement.
So your dad had been gutted if you'd not used that as the first one.
I don't know.
No, it's funny though, but the best advice, the simplest advice is the best advice. Mm. Don't eat yellow snow. Don't assume every day's a school day. They're all good ones.
Yeah.
Is this gonna blow our minds?
No, not all. No, not all. I think I remember once my dad once said to me when I was younger, you make your own luck.
And that has proven to me to be true time and time again. The harder you work, the luckier you get.
Yeah.
Most time, actually. No. But I mean, even if I feel like I'm working harder and I'm not getting luck, I always feel like it's just around, it's through that next door, it's just around, it's coming.
Yeah.
And it always does seem to happen that way. And I think, I don't know who told me this from, but somebody once said to me, you're the architect of your own mind. And I think that when I went away and thought about that in a lot of depth, that holds a lot of meaning to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, you really are capable of doing practically anything within the laws of physics, of course, if you put your mind to it and you're prepared to put the work in. So they're kind of the ones that hold it. Yeah.
Well, I reckon we've got another words of wisdom booklet here just from you, because we'll give two each. That's six each. Yeah. I'm going to produce that. They're all good.
Right. We're going to finish off with one final question. So we're proud supporters for the next couple of years of the Andy's Man Club charity. Andy's Man Club are a men's suicide prevention charity offering free to attend peer-to-peer support groups across the United Kingdom and online. They want to end the stigma surrounding men's mental health and help men through the power of conversation. So they've now got over 300 clubs across the UK.
Yep.
They're free to attend for any man over the age of 18. They run every Monday night, except bank holidays, from 7 o'clock till 9 o'clock. There's no booking, there's no referrals. You literally pull up at the door, walk in, and sit with a group of men just to talk through life and hopefully help people through it. The meetings always follow exactly the same process. They have 5 questions. The final question is always quite a light-hearted question, just to end the meeting on a high, in a positive way, and make people laugh. And it's a very random question.
Correct.
Can be intelligent, can be very flippant, can just be a bit of fun. So that's question 5. And those questions go down that well that they've put their question 5 onto a deck of cards. So I have with me said deck of cards. And on each card, there is one of question number 5. So to finish off, I'm going to ask you to draw a card, read out the question you've selected, and give us the answer. Okay. Ladies first, obviously.
Oh, right. Okay. If you could go anywhere in the world, where would it be and why? That's a really, really good one. But I've been quite fortunate to do quite a lot of traveling. If I could go anywhere at this time, I'd probably go. So recently, my family likes sailing, and recently me and my husband did our sailing qualification.
Nice.
I'd actually probably choose to be on a boat somewhere, enjoying the sunshine.
Sailing
with a nice, blue, peaceful sea.
Nice. Very good. Any particular place in the world?
I'm a fan of the Caribbean. I do like Europe as well. But no, I think just somewhere with nice scenery and blue sea and sun in the sky.
Fantastic. Alistair.
Thank you. What is one thing that you've done in your life that you've enjoyed doing and that very few others will have done?
Be careful now.
I'm not sure if that podcast answers.
You can do it. No, we've got a really good editor. So crack on. Let's hear both.
I'll give you the vanilla one.
No. We're not finishing a podcast with a vanilla answer.
No. Last year I was lucky to have a year sabbatical, and I went travelling through sort of South America and Central America, and then sort of Southeast Asia. So I was very, very lucky to be able to do that. I had some great experiences. Some that aren't podcast appropriate, but that is one thing that I've been very lucky to do, and really glad to have done that.
Some aren't this podcast. Perhaps we need a separate X-rated version for that.
I think we'd definitely be getting cancelled.
Well, he started it with funky calendars, so yeah. That's probably the right way to finish it. You'd either get cancelled, or it'd be the most watched.
Watch the other,
well, yeah. Not in our industry, it'd be the most watched.
Yeah.
are there any films or TV series that you've never seen that you would like to watch? Films or TV series I've never seen that I'd like to watch. Off the top of my head, no. Yeah, I'm quite, I enjoy a film on the weekend.
Stop there. We'll go a bit of the
yeah,
if you can't do it. I think you're either going to like that one or not. This is a bit. Don't play an Andy's Man Club for a band question.
Okay. If you could help someone this week, who would it be and why?
Okay. Do you want to go back to the film and the series question?
Can we do another one? That's terrible. Fucks.
Last go.
You've got good questions. Okay. What or who are you proud of?
What a way to finish. I've been talking about the family legacy of a business.
What are you proud of? I'd say I'm very proud of my family for long-term for achieving what I've achieved, especially my dad and Nick, and giving us the opportunity that we've got. I'm very proud of Imogen Alistair, I'd say, for both, finding their place in the business and both doing so well. That's what I'd say.
Do you know what? I was going to answer one of those then, because I enjoy doing them.
Yeah.
But I'm not after that.
Yeah.
Because that was just a really good, poetic way of finishing off a great podcast. I've really enjoyed this.
Good.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming on. Thank you for being honest. Thank you for sharing what you share. It's great for me working for the business to know that we've got you three coming in behind, Nick and Andrew, and we know there's a good, there's a good future there. So thank you for all you do. It's much appreciated.
Yes.
To our audience, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you have, it would be great if you would like and subscribe on whichever platform that you listen or watch us on. And maybe what you could even do is tell somebody you know who you think might be interested in this podcast all about us. Lovely to see you all. Season 2 is going to continue at a pace, and we look forward to coming and telling you more about our great industry in the future. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
No lie.
Bye.